Professor Virgil Elena, welcome to Microscopio.
Thank you very much for having me.
In this interview, we wanted to talk about celiac disease. And our first question is, what is the function of intestinal microbiota?
So the term intestinal microbiota refers to a complex community of microorganisms that live in our gut. And this includes bacteria, but also virus and fungi. So mostly when we talk about intestinal microbiota, we refer to bacteria, but we have to remember that there are other components like virus and fungi. So this community has adapted to live in our intestines without producing any harm. And as a matter of fact, they add on to our capacity to, for example, metabolize food or other substances, as well as instructs our immune system.
Could you please tell us about the role of the microbiome as possible moderator of our gut health and innate immune system?
Sure. So this relates to the previous question. So since our gut microbiota has adapted to live in our body without producing harm, then they are different in that sense from bugs that could cause disease. So, for example, such as pathogens that cause gastroenteritis. And the way they have adapted to live in this commensal situation is that they regulate immune responses in a way that they are toned down so as not to react to this community of bacteria and cause inflammation, but at the same time instructing the immune system of how to be prepared in the case of an infection that could cause harm.
And research shows that metagenomics is a genetic richness associated with better health. Could you please tell us about that concept?
So this concept is not that straightforward. It is a little bit controversial. It is true that metagenomic studies, some of them, have indicated that there is a higher diversity in situations of health than in disease. But the topic is a little bit more complicated than just saying high diversity, low diversity, health versus disease. So there are disease situations, for example, when a true pathogen is present. The best example is, for example, Clostridium difficile, when, of course, this pathogen is driving a decrease in diversity. But lower diversity does not always mean disease. So I think that the concept is coming up that it's more important to talk about more than these associations of high or low diversity. What we really need is proof of concept of causative effects of changes in the microbiome with specific diseases.
And what microorganisms make the microbiome?
So as I said before, the microbiome is composed of bacteria, virus, fungi, and that most of our knowledge comes from the bacterial component, but we are starting to investigate the role of virum and the fungum as well. So within bacteria, we can subdivide according to phylum, and most humans have two or three dominant phyla, like Firmicutes, Actinobacteria, Bacteria. But within each phylum, there are many different genus and species.
And what is the role of the enteric nervous system, known as the second brain?
So the enteric nervous system is a complex arrangement of neurons that we have within the gut wall. They are divided in two plexi in the gut wall. And the role of the enteric nervous system is to control functions, just as gut motor activities, secretions, which are essential for normal digestion, for normal bowel function. So these activity of these neurons within the gut are independent from the brain. But they are tightly controlled by the brain through neural pathways as well as by hormones and other molecules that can signal to the brain. So in this way, the second brain or the little brain or the enteric nervous system is not dictated by the brain, but it's kept in check by the brain. And this, for example, permits to inhibit situations like defecation when it is not socially possible. Although the enteric nervous system may promote that activity, the brain is going to say this situation is not possible because you are at a meeting with your boss.
How is microbiome formed and what factors are involved?
The microbiome, and I'm mainly talking about the gut microbiome, but we must remember that there is a microbiome, for example, on the skin. So the microbiome in general is acquired at birth by passage of the baby through the vaginal canal. And once the baby is born and has acquired that initial inoculum, to call it that way, from the mother, the baby will continue to acquire microorganisms that come from the environment, from the hospital environment, the house environment, and of course another important element that is going to contribute to shape this community of bacteria will be food, the ingestion of food.
And how is it associated with dysbiosis?
It is very difficult to define dysbiosis. It's a term that is much used and associated with diseased states, but not everyone coincides in defining dysbiosis. So in general terms, this implies a deviation from the normal microbiome. But in all honesty, we cannot today define properly a normal microbiome either. So one could say that a normal microbiome is one which is adapted to the individual, that does not cause harm, that protects from disease, and that any deviation, any perturbation from that stability could be interpreted as dysbiosis and could promote disease.
And how can we improve or develop microbiome?
So this is also a tricky question because there is no direct answer to it. So it relates to what we already discussed, right? Definition of the microbiome and what is normal and what is abnormal. So any infection, antimicrobial, antibiotics, or even a certain kind of diet could change your microbiome and promote a certain disease. So you could use this same idea to restore it to an equilibrium. So there are many groups that are working on probiotic approaches and food related approaches, what we call the prebiotic approach, to reshape the microbiome. But we need to keep in mind that if we don't have a clear idea of what a normal microbiome is, then we could be inducing changes that are unwanted with these strategies, and we need more research.
What is the influence of the microbiome on the diseases related to gluten?
Because we haven't talked about this before, so diseases related to gluten are all those that could be triggered by the ingestion of gluten-containing foods, like, for example, cereals like wheat, rye, and barley. The typical disease which is associated with this and triggered by gluten is celiac disease. But there could be other non-celiac conditions that could develop from an abnormal reaction to gluten. So the relationship of microbes in gluten-related disorders, or more specifically in celiac disease, this is just beginning to emerge. So I told you at the beginning of the conversation that the intestinal microbiota could help the host, the person that is harboring that microbiota, in metabolizing food. So we know that bacteria are metabolically very active. They produce many enzymes and many other molecules that could have an impact on the host. And with respect to gluten, and this is something that my group has been working on, we found that some bacteria from celiac patients, bacteria that are what we call opportunistic pathogens, they could sit between, you know, being a commensal but could turn dangerous at certain points. And commensals, such as lactobacillus, are different from the ones we found in healthy people. And they have different gluten-degrading capacity. And so, for example, we have found that an opportunistic pathogen from celiac people can metabolize gluten in such a way that they produce gluten peptides that can induce inflammation in celiacs. While if we add lactobacillus to that metabolic activity, then those gluten peptides are metabolized completely and the inflammatory capacity is reduced. So just to put it in simple words, what the results of these investigations tell us is that perhaps there are interactions between gut bacteria and the ingested gluten in the food you consume that could influence the risk of a person to react in a bad way or in a good way to gluten.
And could you please tell us about the importance of the intestinal barrier in the intestinal homeostasis?
Before saying this, perhaps we should explain what the intestinal barrier is. This is, again, a very broad term, and it refers to a structural barrier that is given by the cells that line the inner surface of our guts, but also many other cells, immune cells that infiltrate, that live in the gut wall, and that produce, for example, immunoglobulins that can block bacteria, the substances like antimicrobials that are produced by our own cells that can keep bacteria in check. So all these functions combine to form the intestinal barrier. And you will have, for example, terms like intestinal permeability, which is part of what we consider the intestinal barrier, but the intestinal barrier is much more than just letting substances in or out. So you can imagine that maintaining overall all these functions, structural, immune, and permeability, is essential to keep us healthy, and that any breach in this barrier could allow massive amounts of material that are normally in the gut lumen into the body, and that could cause harm or inflammation.
Well, thank you very much, Professor Verduelena. It has been a pleasure to have you in Microscopia.
You're welcome. Thank you for inviting me.
Thank you. Goodbye.
Thank you. Bye-bye.